Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. Roman Reigns winning Superstar of the Year on Raw seems as legitimate a vote as George Bush winning in 2000. Speaking of Bush, that crowd reaction on Raw was something else. The WWE hasn't heard women scream like that since Ric Flair showed those flight attendants why he was really called the Nature Boy at 30,000 feet.
I'm G. John Chase. Did you see the women's match with Charlotte and Natalya? I mean, what the fuck was that about? I mean, they're trying to promote another show by showing the champion. They have a job to Natalya. And to make this worse, they're in the Carolinas as well. They're in Flair country. For Christ's sake, this is why I don't watch this shit anymore!
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. And I must say, I am thoroughly encouraged to see CM Punk take on board some constructive criticism. Only weeks ago, I advised the reason why he couldn't draw outside of his base wrestling audience is because no one takes him seriously. No sooner as I said that, he signs for the UFC. Maybe one day you actually will headline WrestleMania now, if you don't get knocked the fuck out in UFC. Which you will.
This is the panel for the 23rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the wrestlers that needed to be in a different time and place next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 23rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
Still pissed off.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Aha.
And we are here today to talk about the wrestlers who were in the wrong time and place. We have gotten a hell of a lot of feedback from you, the loyal listeners. We are going to run through all these candidates on this show. But before we get into that, I just want to make a special mention of next week's show. We're actually previewing next week, which is something I don't think we've actually done before. But it is Christmas week. So we're going to be doing our Christmas Squared Circle Gazette Radio show. And for a little bit of a change of pace, we're not going to have a built-in topic to our show. It's going to be a random just musing of mixed thoughts on the wrestling business. Random wrestling bullshit.
A trifle.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we are looking actually...
A trifle.
Yeah. Trifle.
A trifle.
Hey, so.
I'm the custard.
So what we're looking for is a bit more we love our audience participation. We're going for a little bit more on this show. So if you want to send your questions to us on topics to discuss, send them to scgradio@hotmail.com and we're going to read them all on the show. So again, scgradio@hotmail.com. Throw us your questions, throw us your discussion points, your topics that you want us to kind of muse over. We're going to be drinking rather heavily, I expect, since it tis the season. And Carl will be here for Carl every week is the season. So yeah, again, it's going to be a lot of fun. But now we're going to cut back into wrestlers who are in the wrong place and time. Pretty interesting little discussion point here, Kieran. This is one that you were kind of leaning towards doing this show.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I think after the kind of we've done a lot of history pieces, and it's nice to do something a bit more speculative, and I think it gets the juices flowing. I think people like doing that. It's fun to do, so I think we should have some fun today.
Yeah, I was having trouble with this one actually, trying to figure it through. I don't know whose idea it was, but it was just it was just a tricky one.
We've got so many different candidates here that we're going to get to, so we're going to hit one of the main talking points very, very early, because when this comes up, one of the first names that automatically comes to mind is Superstar Billy Graham, and that's the guy that we got the most nominations for. So why fuck around? Let's get straight to it. Slicky Tricky Damon from TPWW says, Billy Graham, his DVD is called A Decade Too Soon. He was the right personality for dominance in sports entertainment that became the norm of the 1980s and beyond. He stuck out like a sore thumb in the 1970s where everybody was a serious wrestler. He had a lot of success being the only one in the WWE like that, but he could have been what Hulk Hogan was if he was healthy in the 1980s. Cabraxel from the Wrestling Forum says, Billy Graham, granted he was the flashpoint for what would eventually become Hulkamania, but I think he would have been huge in the 80s under the new direction instead of being misunderstood by Vince Sr. Rockstar Dud from the Wrestling Forum also says Billy Graham in the 80s or 90s. R Zombie 1988 from Pro Wrestling Only. Billy Graham should have debuted in the late 70s a la Hogan and should have stayed away from the drugs. He would have been perfect for the 1980s. Boise from the UK Fan Forum says Billy Graham always springs to mind when this comes up years ahead of his time.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good choice, I'd think. But to be a bit of a douche, I guess. I mean, the obvious thing is that if you took him out of that timeline, then we probably wouldn't have had people like Hulk Hogan and so on, because he was the archetype, wasn't it? He was pretty much who Hogan was copying, and a lot of people as well.
Jesse.
I'm sure. Yeah, Jesse's another one. I'm sure. You know, people like Macho Man and so on also got a lot of ideas from him as well. So he was kind of like. Whilst obviously he could have been in another era a lot more of a bigger name than he actually was, probably the actual career he ended up being is actually a lot more important, because he was the guy that held it in a different era of wrestler.
Yeah, but again, at the same time, it is that thing of Do you really want to be known more as the influence or the guy who actually has the success that the guy you influenced ended up having?
Well, I think he'd probably prefer the paycheck.
Well, his bank his bank manager would prefer the other one, I'm sure. But
He could have. He should have had a longer run as champion. He probably should have turned babyface as champion rather than going to Bob Backlund. If I'm Vince Senior, that's the decision I'm making.
Yeah,
but it's kind of a difficult thing to say because, like you said, in the 80s, I mean, would he have actually been a better Hulk Hogan than Hulk Hogan?
I see, this is the argument. Wouldn't anyone ever, like, can you replace Hogan? Could it have been Steamboat Savage, etc., etc.? I think we've done a show on this before. It's impossible to say. The fact that Billy was so instrumental in people copying him, you know, going into the 80s, I think you kind of probably have to put to one. Well, do you put it to one side, or do you assume someone else would have done it if he hadn't have done it at the time? This is the interesting thing. Like, Hogan flourished in an environment, you could say, that which was helped set up to a large degree by copying Graham.
Yeah.
With that groundwork done, if you take Billy Graham into the 80s,
I see what you mean. It's kind of like it's a weird train of thought, because I see what you mean. If you actually take him and you put him in that position, is the culture ready as it was for Hogan, in the sense of, does the cartoon character, I mean, is it still the same kind of effect?
Yeah.
Does the cartoon character still come to life with Billy Graham the same as it does with Hogan? It's a different thing.
And are we saying he wouldn't replace Hogan, so be there at the same time as Hogan? So
would Hogan have even been there if Billy Graham hadn't inspired him?
I'm not a Billy Graham expert. I'd assume that wouldn't have actually ended up being in the Hogan role. I'd assume he would have been in, like, the heel role. He always came across more as heel to me.
This is the thing, and that's kind of the way that Vince Sr. saw it. He was going to be the colourful, flamboyant heel that was going to hold the belt for a year. We know when he's winning it, we know when he's losing it, and then you're done.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the case with Graham. But to me, you can just see it. The money in him is as a babyface. He's got so much more. There's just so much more about him with the fucking tan, the barley, the tie dye, the promos. He's not a great worker, but neither is Hogan.
But Hogan's underrated though
as a worker.
Yeah, I'd say so.
At times.
I watch early Hogan, and he does. He impresses me. Well, it surprised me. Maybe maybe impress is going too far, but he wasn't a slouch, and he could sell, which is the big thing.
Sure. Billy Graham, who knows how he would have actually worked as a babyface in terms of whether or not he would have had that kind of in-ring magnetism that Hogan had.
Yeah, I think that's the thing probably for Hogan's repertoire that is really maybe overlooked is he was a really good working babyface, and, you know, he's psychologically pretty sound, underrated as in that role. So could Graham? I haven't seen enough of Graham as a face to know to comment either on that.
It didn't really do. But, I mean, there wasn't much Billy Graham babyface stuff to really analyse.
Yeah.
You look at the cocky persona, although that's maybe in the, you know, late 90s, that would have made mid 90s, that'd have faced him. I think maybe in the 80s, I don't know, I still think probably as a heel and working opposite Hogan. So
he was the first guy to really have that chiseled Herculean physique, like that steroids, right? He was that first guy to have that steroid physique and really showcase it off.
Wouldn't have been the first, but the point that you're trying to make is that he's obviously the first that got the big push and obviously helped people.
That's what Vince picked up on. The character aspect he probably didn't like at first or whatever, and maybe moved in that direction eventually. But the one thing you can definitely see he moved in a direction straight away was the chiseled physique. As soon as he saw that, he was just like, right, everyone's gonna look like this now.
Innovator from TPWW says, Vader, if he came to the WWE in his prime in 1998.
Ooh, yeah. Well, 98, it's a good period, I think. I'm guessing we're gonna get a lot of feedback for that period when Vince was actually, you know, receptive to elevating talent and seeing apparently less obstacles in the way.
A little bit more of an open mind on who to push.
Yeah, because they needed guys and they were desperate for them.
They're in a war.
Reed Foley. Vader, yeah, I love Vader.
Vader in his prime, coming in this period of time as a Vince hired machine to come and get Austin.
Yeah, badass, that could have been cool.
Fucking slay this crappy mid-card roster we've gotten. Yeah. You seem unconvinced, Chase, on the other side of the table.
Well, nothing against Vader. Obviously, I love Vader a lot. He was my choice for best big man a long time ago. But, I don't know, particularly the year, 98... I'm really not sure about that. I mean, first off, it's not too far removed from the period in which he was actually in the company.
Well, he was in
he was as well, wasn't he? And they didn't freaking use him anyway. The only thing I've got in the back of my head, and this is, I guess this will go with any situation in the 80s with Hogan, is just like, you got Austin. So, like, Vader in himself had, like, the glass ceiling. Like, because in our minds, we all like to think, like Vader, given the proper push and everything, that he'd be, like, the Mac Daddy. Not the baby face, so. Not the baby face, but he'd be, like, one that you'd be the top guy, because that's how you'd push him, surely.
I wouldn't. I'd push him as the monster heel. He's the guy in. The guy that draws a lot of natural connections to is Brock Lesnar, and I think that's a fair comparison.
I think the thing, saying he was in like 2 years earlier, where he's still there in 98, but different landscape. If he'd come in 98 and he hadn't Vince, first of all, you haven't got the Shawn Michaels element and the click element there holding the eyes down, then desperate for talent, desperate for guys for Austin to work with, desperate to create some stars. So if they haven't got the previous bag, he comes in fresh. It's a different ball game for him in 98 to 96.
I don't know.
We're talking prime Vader here. Vader had been silly by the time he got in there in 96. He'd had the shoulder surgery. He wasn't as good as he had been in like 92, 93, 94.
Vader in his prime will be a credit to any locker room at any time, I'm sure. But like, I don't know. I just don't completely buy it. I mean, like, 98, I think it's really sticking in me. Maybe if it was 99. I could go with that in 99, because 99 I think was more of a situation than 98.
They had a really shitty,
you know. But because 98, all I'm thinking of is the people they eventually used. That they used Undertaker and Kane, and so like when you got two big guys like that, do you really need a third one in Vader? As a top heel, he would have gone like so far, and then eventually they would, which would have been a big match. It would have had to have done Austin Vader, and it's just obviously in the end who's going over on that one. It's fine.
The only question in my eyes would be: would they Big Show him and bow down to Austin? But you know, if he was coming from WCW, probably would. If he was fresh, if he didn't have a WCW stigma coming in, they may have been a bit more generous of protecting him.
It's just that Vince McMahon mentality, man. Even if it wasn't WCW, another cut. It's still back then.
They pushed Foley, they pushed Austin, they pushed a lot of guys who were WCW guys.
But again, if we're talking about time periods, that was back in 96 for both those guys. Again, so it's a different time period where they were really desperate. The desperation in building someone else in 96 was a lot different to 98. They were like really scratching at things, which is why Vader not being used properly in 96.
Austin, no way.
No, I was thinking, in 96, they were far less desperate, I would argue, because they actually didn't use Vader well at all.
They were almost willing to tread a bit of water because of the click influence at the top of the card and stuff. 98 is a different ball game, so yeah, I could disagree on that one.
That's weird, because I really never have grasped 98 as being a year in which they're clutching at straws. It's always been the year before and after for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they were necessarily clutching at straws. I would just say that the market for Vader, as in his prime, unsullied, untarnished, doesn't necessarily have to have the reputation from anywhere else other than Japan, coming in as the big badass monster who can work with. I mean, can you imagine the matches prime Vader versus Austin back then? With how hot the crowd would have been. Would have been electric. Moving along to one a little bit more current and one that might get a raised eyebrow. Santa Banks from the Wrestling Forum. I'll have to go with Test. He was vastly overshadowed in the Attitude Era by a bunch of A-plus players, but he'd succeed in this era of zero star power and charisma vacuums. He has the presence, the size, the look, the super agility for a big guy, and an exciting signature moveset. He would have easily been a top guy in the modern era.
So he wants to remove Tess from the Attitude Era, so say 2000, and move him into the modern day?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Isn't that just essentially Roman Reigns?
No.
I think
different situation. No, different situation. It's not for me. Test again. It's coming from this era where we as fans were conditioned that WWE could create stars, and he was one of the guys we were prepared, and it was in the psyche that he was going to be, and they were going to make something out of him. I just think he's distinctly average, to be perfectly honest. I think there's a million guys like him.
I think he's chosen the wrong era to put him into. I mean, anybody from another era is going to be hard pressed in my opinion, to get over in this modern era, just because my general opinion on the product.
Saying all that, I'm not saying. I'm saying Tess isn't anything special, but yeah, get a massive push today.
Oh yeah, he'll definitely get a push.
He still look like that after drugs, or unless, or smarter, I don't know, whatever.
But I mean, I'd actually think someone with Tess, if you really wanted to find someone better than the Attitude Era, you'd have to look backwards. I mean, in the 80s, if he went into the 80s, he went in Golden Era, then he would have probably been a Bobby Heenan guy. He'd have been like, because he can't talk.
The 80s, so he's just lost in the shuffle for me. There's
so many big guys.
He would have been Hercules or someone like that. He would have just been somewhere in the middle. not there.
He probably wouldn't be there, because he's probably slimmer than him as well. So.
Probably the best chance he would have had, with the lack of charisma, but the fact he's got great size, is probably the new generation era.
Does he have that same impressive size off drugs?
He was tall, I guess. I don't know. It depends, because if we're taking him from 99...
Yeah.
99, he was pretty
big. But then again, there's a lot of circumstances at the time. Like I said, 99, he could deal with the drugs he wants. This is a horrible thing to say about the guy who died, but you know what I'm saying.
Because, if we're gonna have tests, we'll have him from 99. We're not going to have him when he was in ECW, for Christ's sake.
You know what, though? To me, that's actually not a bad argument, like you said, though, because he was around in a very close scenario to the modern era when he was back, and he didn't get over it at all, I don't think.
Yeah. I mean, if he rocked up in NXT today, he'd be the golden boy for his time, so no doubt about that.
But does he crash and burn this? Well, not crash and burn, but does he just not achieve in the same way he pretty much did anyway?
Yeah, I just think he's distinctly average.
He's mid-card.
Fairly big,
mid-card
big guy.
Fraz from the F4W board. Eddie Guerrero, 10 years later, he would have skipped most of WCW's little guy bias and bullshit and peaked right around the time that wrestling was desperate for Latino star.
It is a tough one, because, I mean, I see the argument with Eddie is it was too short at the end and it ended too soon for him, but I mean, you know, we all know what that was, but he also kind of, the road he trod kind of was a bit of his...
I think it was a lot of the charm of why he finally got where he did.
Yeah. I think Eddie probably came, I think he was probably perfectly timed.
I think so.
Maybe he's by the time he made it big, maybe a year or two, because his body was really playing up with him. But I think he probably came along at the right time. And I wouldn't. Just longevity with Eddie for me.
I pretty much agree that. I don't think I would put him earlier. I don't think I'd put him later. The reason why the whole Latin star thing is a big deal now is because people realise when Eddie Guerrero was given the push, holy crap, look at the difference this is making because of all the Latino viewers.
Yeah. The thing is, like, if he came around today looking for a Latin star, but they would treat him exactly the same as they treated him anyway.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't bring him in like Del Rio as like the golden Latino.
Yeah.
He'd get brought in because
would he be Sin Cara?
He wouldn't even have that build up to start with, I think. The best he could wish for would be not get completely buried and exactly what happened to him.
Work his way up.
Yeah, hang in there through the bullshit and get yourself over kind of thing. So that's pretty much.
I think you're absolutely right from what you said before, is just and from the feedback as well, is just for Eddie Guerrero it would be the fact that he went too soon. In terms of like everyone who has passed away in the wrestling business, in terms of current performers, Eddie Guerrero is the one I miss the most.
Moving on to another current one, though, that got a lot of nominations, The Big Show. Maluko from TPWW Forum says, Big Show as Andre started to wind down. His agility and charisma, as well as being the biggest man in a big man era, would have made him a superstar. Roman Empire from the Wrestling Forum says, Big Show, if he came along in, say, 1980, probably the second biggest star ever behind Hogan. Look how big Andre was, and he was probably the worst in-ring worker ever and equally bad on the mic. I'll address that in a second. CS from Pro Wrestling Only, Big Show seems like the obvious one, would have been a huge star in any other era.
Yeah, Big Show was the first name I did think of when trying to brainstorm over this, because I mean, let's just take from a booking standpoint first of all. First off, there'd be much more better consistency for someone like Paul White in the 80s. I mean, like you looked at the amount of the chop and change between heel and babyface that he's had in his career so far.
What was it? Did you hear the stat that Meltzer had?
I can't remember what it was. Is it?
It's like 36 heel turns in his career.
Fucking hell.
Or 36 turns,
right.
Sorry.
That's just ridiculous, right? In the 80s, someone like Big Show, he would have probably started off as a heel, had a good run as a heel, a long time, we're talking years, then probably went babyface, and then probably like Andre, I'm going to use Andre as the kind of blueprint, I guess, and ended up as a heel again, just to segue out. Yeah, he would have had a lot more consistency. You can almost guarantee that you would not see Big Show in a fucking gigantic nappy wrestling at WrestleMania if he was in the 80s. You would not see Big Show fight, box, a midget of a fighter, and there's no offense to Floyd Mayweather, but you would never see that. Never. In the 80s.
Well, King Kong Bundy did drop an elbow on a midget at WrestleMania.
he did. That's King Kong Bundy, and that's his speciality. But like, but Big Show, yeah. All that bad stuff that they'd done with Big Show, all those moments where he just turned around and went, why? I was watching some old footage on YouTube. I can't even remember what the footage was. It was something from a couple of years ago. And just randomly on there, it was a Christmas edition, and just randomly, it just showed a promo of Big Show dressed in a nappy.
Oh, is this last year?
Yeah, it was the last year.
This is Baby New Year.
Yeah, Baby New Year. And he's just acting like a buffoon. I'm just looking at him saying like, What the hell is this?
And this was right after his mega push to the build up to the Randy Orton match Survivor Series that they gave up on 2 weeks before the pay-per-view, and then they had him dressed as a baby next week.
Exactly. They would not have given up on him. I mean, like, depending on which big show he got. If we got, like, Giant, we got him from, like, early, like, WCW, holy shit, Vince would have loved that.
Oh, yeah.
Vince would have desperately loved him. He would have pushed him to the sky. He would have given him a belt.
It was Vince looking at the Giant in 95 and 96 that made him want him so bad, because he thought, this company doesn't know how to book a Giant. If only I could get my hands on him, I'd show you what to do with this raw piece of 7-foot clay.
Yeah, dumbass.
So, and that's the thing. I think for me, it's not... Show needs to be in the territories rather than one...
He needs to be Andre.
One company... That's the problem. When he gets a nice little push, he has his little one match run, and then he gets turned, he gets flipped. So I think he just needs to be in a place where he can actually move around and leave, probably.
Yeah.
I suppose, if he's in, say, the WWE mid-80s, I suppose they wouldn't be flipping and flopping him.
Plus, television's a lot slower during that period of time, so you can make those appearances special. Mm. I think there was one interesting comment just kind of defend Andre the Giant for being called one of the worst work of all time. Didn't look good doing anything during his later period, but it's not like he didn't know what he was doing. He knew what points he had to hit and stuff like that. And I think that the reason why Andre was what he was because of the backlog and the equity, I guess, that he'd built up over the years by selling out all over the country before the national expansion took place in the first place. There's a suggestion there that he takes Andre's place when Andre goes.
Yeah.
Do you think that during that, which would have been like the 1990 period, talking off air, it was such a putrid year for the WWE.
Oh,
boring anyway.
I mean, when you look at like WrestleMania 6 and the fact that he's barely involved in the match.
Yeah, he can't move.
The guy just can't move at all. So at that time period, absolutely, he would have jumped at the chance. He would have threw all the money he could to get Big Show to replace Andre.
All right, moving on to another big one here. Randy Savage is suggested by Steve Bochenek. My favourite pick for a time change would be Savage. He would have been a number one guy anywhere in the world pretty much at any time other than being stuck in Hogan's shadow when he was. He had the size, speed, charisma, athleticism and mic skills to carry a company, but never had the opportunity because of the presence of Hogan. Even when he had the titles, Hogan was the face and the political force behind the companies.
Yeah, Randy Savage can be the top star in any company at any time, ever. He's that good. He should have been number one guy in the 80s as well. Fuck you, Hogan.
I am the doctor from Pro Wrestling Only, also agreed. I'd go with Randy Savage, who was ahead of his time and could have had massive success if he'd started out around the mid-90s. That's not to say he wasn't good in the 80s, because he was brilliant, but I would have loved to have seen his character in the late 90s and early 21st century. Savage in the WWF, I love it when he's first there, and he's the Intercontinental Champion. That's the Randy Savage, that heel Savage that I think really translates well. And Kieran, you mentioned off the air that you think in the Attitude Era, that Savage would have gotten over huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's super talented if he'd end up as a face, but personal enjoyment, he was a beast as a heel. And when he was young and he could move, and he was so ahead of his time the way he could move. I'd love to see him as an aggressive heel in the Attitude Era. That'd be fantastic. I mean, that's so exciting.
Even to an extent, I mean, again, Liam will know the figures more, but when he actually did get the title in the 80s, away from Hogan, as far as I'm aware, he was a success.
Basically, the pattern was that after every WrestleMania would always be down for Hogan's post-WrestleMania runs. The exception was that when Savage won the title at WrestleMania 4, the post-WrestleMania business in his feud with Ted DiBiase was the most successful post-Mania house show run of any post-WrestleMania house show run up to that point. Now, it did tail off, don't get me wrong, it didn't last that way forever, but the initial ones with DiBiase and Savage did very, very well. To counter this argument, though, I mean, they did give Savage the belt when Hogan was gone in 92, and it didn't do well at all.
Yeah, I mean, at that time when he came back and he won the title in 92, I mean, he'd only been back for a while. You know, he'd done the Jake the Snake Roberts feud, which we've already gone into, and was fantastic. So I guess don't fully believe Vince put everything behind Savage in that title reign. I didn't get that feeling like, okay, he's putting the ball on Savage again now and he's going to run with him. It just felt like he was a placeholder.
And again, a part of that whole thing of 92, I think, is kind of, Hogan being gone. I think a lot of stuff back then felt like a placeholder, to be quite honest. There's nothing against Savage in that run. It's just, I think that during that period when Hogan was gone, they were looking for a place to go. They were looking for a new direction. They didn't know really what they were doing.
Super transitional. Yeah, absolutely. I think they caught between two time frames almost. I think that's the thing for me watching 92. He needed a facelift, Savage, and when they went to him, it just... it was coming out of the, it was, it, it did feel, WWE in general, that period, it was coming out of the 80s and maybe didn't know where it was going and
felt like a step back.
Yeah, exactly. We, you know, we've got all these neon colours again on TV. So we talked about it when we talked about going into 95 as well, about the Monday Night Wars. It's kind of a, the tail end of that 80s era, and maybe Savage, and just thinking for myself at that time, Savage was, he was an old guy, and you know, watch about now, you know, he's still a lot of value in him, obviously. But if he could go 100%, I still think he'd need, he probably should, he needed to adjust his character at that time. What happened, he went to WCW and lived off the old macho gimmick anyway until he ended up doing obviously the NWO shenanigans. But
which, coincidentally enough, when he actually did change his look, yeah, and change, yeah, himself a little bit and had the people DDP, it did inject new life into him.
I just think, yeah, that darker, that edge, I mean, yeah, he was just the macho man, you know, as we know, but just something darker, bringing out that gritty, edgy, yeah, side. I think in that period of time, I think it would have been like, yeah, yeah, big gains for him.
I think
badass, yeah, angry heel feuding with Austin, crazy brawls. God damn, that'd be
well, especially if he had the motor that he'd had.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's what I'm talking. If he had that, yeah, that engine feuding with like an Austin over the tile, that'd be magic.
Fucking those intense feud of all, yeah, time. We've got one of my favorites here. Bad News Gertner from TPWW. The Junkyard Dog. Anytime in the last 15 years, the WWE has been dying for an African American face wrestler to get over. He'd appeal to the kids, was extremely charismatic and very, very marketable.
If he came along today, he'd be a comedy character working with Santino.
Man, yeah, I mean, God, I don't even want to imagine the matches, to be honest.
Why is that,
but yeah,
anyway?
Again, a guy who did have a lot of charisma, and you know, we've seen him at his best in Mid-South in 83 and 84, Kieran. Do you think that he's the right guy? Like, yeah, like for this modern era? Like, again, not the best worker, which, you know, does that hold the guy back a little bit? Who knows, but does that charisma connect today, do you think?
If, yeah, I mean, that does. I don't know if he would have been able to go today. Again, I just think you'd still have to have a lot of smoke and mirrors from him, I think. So
yeah,
maybe a period like, say, the Attitude Era, where work rate really wasn't great at all in WWF, mid-card at least.
Do you think he really gets over to a top level, though, to me? I mean,
No. See, this thing, I'm just thinking, really thinking in terms of just value to the show.
Yeah.
What modern period would you add value to the show? I don't think he can go to be at the level to be a top guy, to be honest.
So you think he would just kind of end up being that kind of guy who's got shitloads of charisma, but he's a character babyface?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So kind of pretty much what he was in the WWF in many respects.
Pretty much, yeah, to be honest. I think maybe I'm talking within the confines of that company. Yeah, I think that's his level.
Charisma translates to whenever. Again, you have to pretty much base the whole company around. You need to give the smoke and mirrors that you would to a guy like Cena, I think.
You like him to Cena, but God, Cena's a great babyface.
JYD's a great babyface too.
Working babyface.
Touche.
Sorry, I do not rate Junkyard Dog in any way, shape or form. Definitely not in the ring, obviously, and not in charisma.
Oh, that's wrong.
I'm sorry. If you like Junkyard Dog, that's absolutely fair, dudes. Everyone has, you know, personal taste and so on, and you know, the emailer as well. But I mean, obviously, I saw him first when he was in WWF. Wasn't impressed. Kept hearing about, watch him in Mid-South. Oh, he's the man in Mid-South. Watch him in Mid-South. I watched him in Mid-South. He wasn't the man to me. Okay, I just watched it. I just went, I don't get it. I don't get why he was so popular.
In
okay?
that sense,
the booking, I can understand. The booking was great, but just him himself, I just thought like they really took something that had nothing and just made something out of
say,
it. I didn't see anything in him at all.
Oh, that's wrong. Personally. Yeah, like, yeah, a shitload of charisma, and he could talk. Although to that point, though, what you just said about the whole, you know, going back and looking at him and how he doesn't really connect to you. In that sense, perfect time and place.
Probably.
I don't know how he has more success on a national level that he had in the Mid-South territory anyway, to be perfectly honest.
No, that's a good point. I probably agree with that.
Also, this is kind of interesting. I think, was it at the start of the email where he was talking about, like, black African-American,
Yeah, the WWE's been dying for a black baby face.
Yeah, that's just in general. I'm going to segue here. That's just a lot of that in wrestling, where it's just this weird kind of little kind of underlying thing of where, like, these promoters are always trying to find, like, their next big black star.
Booker had a good run.
Yeah, Booker had a good run. Booker's probably the best example recently. And there's also another guy who was obviously more recently in the last like 10 years who I will actually kind of nominate now just very kind of briefly, and my choice would be Bobby Lashley, who's more recent. And I would say that Bobby Lashley would have been a great choice to have in WCW in 1992
and get the Von Simmons push.
Yeah, pretty much, because and it's no offense to Ron Simmons and all, but like probably in total, Lashley probably doesn't just ooze charisma the way that probably like Junkyard Dog, I guess. But in terms of just sheer ability, size, look, athletic ability, as I said, and also just his background as well in amateur wrestling, someone like that, Bill Watts would have just like just cried over it. He would have jumped at the chance to book someone like him. Probably even back in those territory days when instead of Junkyard Dog, if you had Junkyard Dog and Bobby Lashley, I thought that would have been a tough pick for him.
You say, it wouldn't have been, because they'd have looked at the gates, and when Junkyard's drawing like five times the gate, Mr.
Well,
No Charisma
Lashley can't talk to save his life. Yeah. And doesn't connect to people.
Yeah, okay. No chance. Yeah. Ron Simmons has got more charisma in his afro than big bald black baby face,
soft spoken, soft hard hitting.
Yeah.
It's just the wrestling ability, and it's what I was specifically pointed out in 1992, where they were looking for like new guys. Just Lashley for me would have been a great choice. That would have been a great time for him to be in that company.
Where has this Lashley being a great worker thing come from?
I have no idea.
Great worker's probably a strong point. If I've actually said that, I apologise.
He's got wrestling abilities.
He's got good wrestling ability. He does have good wrestling ability. He is a natural athlete. But you know, being nurtured in like the 90s.
Anything more than average worker ever.
Yeah, but average worker was the same with Junkyard Dog or even Ron Simmons.
Yeah, but again, but that standard though, however, if they are at the same level on there, where is Bobby Lashley better other than the look? Which again, granted, meant more back then. So I'm not trying to shout on your point by any means. Yeah. But I'm just saying, is the size going to make as much of a difference as charisma? Which obviously there is a bigger disparity, I'd say, between JYD.
You know what? You're absolutely right. It doesn't. Size of the wrestler does not matter. I just wish Vince was listening to this.
Oh, true.
No, I mean, yeah, I agree.
But that wasn't the case back then.
No, I agree. Lashley would have been given a chance at some point because of the look.
It's just from what I've seen of Bill Watts and seen the people who he has picked, I just see Bobby Lashley as being someone that can easily fit within that roster of people that he would have just turned around and went, yeah,
you.
I'm having you. I'm going to make you a star. I'm going to make you world champion.
Right, so moving back into it here, we got another one from Fraz from F4W before we move on to somebody else completely different. Jack Swagger in 94 would have been huge. A big guy, good looking, hell of a worker who would have meshed with the top guys at full speed. Current WWE is all about being an articulate promo. Back then, they would have worked around it and made him a big deal. What do you think about Swagger back then in the new generation?
I've got nothing against Jack. But I haven't got a lot for him either, to be perfectly honest.
No.
And I think that kind of sums him up. If you drop him into any era, I think his innate limitations, charisma-wise. We've seen it now. He's probably his most over and almost comfortable and more fire in his eyes now in his little on-off thing with Rusev. But I think out of that, I think he struggles.
As soon as you strip that away, it's almost like he's back at square one.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, you know, the feedback does talk about, you know, protecting a guy's will that be an articulate promo. They did do that by putting him with Zeb Coulter. And still, when they gave him that big heel run, it didn't click.
Yeah, there's more to charisma than the words you say. So, kind of touched on this already. I mean, he's a solid guy. I think he's a solid hand. But I really don't see more than that in Swagger, unfortunately.
Okay.
Although maybe in a different era, his size maybe would have give him a bit of an edge. I just don't think there's bigger guys, there's better guys, I think.
Yeah, actually, it's funny because me and G were talking about this one last night, and I actually kind of mentioned, I wonder how he would have fared in that kind of mid-80s NWA kind of period of time.
Yeah, he probably would have been a guy who had a great rep as a legit guy who was young and stood, and maybe would have been a decent guy for a project down the line, and then the territories would have died and he would have signed for WWE and been a low mid carder,
and this is what he did anyway.
I just don't see more.
I'm gonna probably throw Swagger in the same deal as Lashley, as in not that but Wiltz would book him, but I think probably with Swagger, in terms of his success, I think any chance of success he could have, it would have to be away from WWF, as far away from Vince as possible. I think if he was putting like the territories, or if he was putting WCW, I think he would have had a good chance. As I said, again, with the amateur background and stuff, you know, big hoss, you know, I think he would have had a chance. Would I think he'd be in the the man? No.
I think in WWE, old WWF, WCW territories, anywhere you put him, I think he needs to find something and connect that he hasn't done so far in his career.
Yeah.
So I think there's a massive intangible missing that wherever he goes, he'd need to find. So I just don't see it in his current guys or shown in his career.
He strikes me as the kind of fella who there's always a better option for a key role. There's always been better heels, there's always been better baby faces.
That audience of that time would have connected with Swagger because it was a completely different mentality back then.
Yeah, but even then,
an American hero, American athlete, like that might have got over with
the... Because there's guys like Brad Rangins, who bless them, they had an important role, but it wasn't like they connected on a level so far above what Swagger has done at his best now that I would say, wow, he's a slam dunk. He's got some height on him, but it's, you know, there's a lot of guys like that, I think.
The whole point of this podcast is speculative, taking guys and dropping into different eras. Mm. But I think the point, you look at someone like Savage, who's kind of universally we all agreed on. Mm. He wasn't searching for something, although I said I'd like to see him change his gimmick. Mm. In terms of a talent, he had everything there in place. With Swagger, I think he's still searching for something which he's never shown. And if I don't think, without finding something that's there, you could say he could go to a different era and be more successful.
Would he have just been another Lex Luger?
I didn't think he wouldn't have even gotten that far.
He ain't got the pecs, so he wouldn't have been.
He hasn't got the
bard. Yeah, he doesn't, does he?
Doesn't have the bard. Creative name from Wrestling Forum says Ravishing Rick Rude. Charismatic, great luck, legendary manager in Bobby Heenan, and oh yeah, he could wrestle good. He was over during the 80s and early 90s with his gimmick. However, had he come along during the Attitude Era, he would have been more of a legend. Think of Val Venus and his porn star gimmick. Replace Val with Rude, and you have a top 5 star in the Attitude Era.
I think Rude would have been a star in the Attitude Era if he hadn't got injured full stop. If his back wasn't fucked in the...
If he'd hung on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he would have had a run in off of Austin or opposite Austin or something like that, a regurgitated star.
Well, that was his plan, wasn't it, when he died? He was heading back to the WWF to do a comeback and hopefully feud with Austin.
Was that the actual...
That was his plan, and he'd gained a lot of weight, and before you know it, you go.
I big Rude fan. Yeah, everything about the guy's just the look, so nice. I love Rude.
Do you prefer long-haired Rude or short-haired business Rude?
Long-haired Rude.
Oh,
all day, every day.
I absolutely agree. It's just, I don't love him as much as Macho Man, obviously, but as a kid, he was another one of those guys, another one of heels that I just kind of got drew to, where I thought, like, this guy's better than Ultimate Warrior, blatantly. This guy's freaking awesome. I'm more of a short-haired, rude guy, I guess, though the Buffon poodle hair is just majestic. Rude is just so goddamn good. He would have fitted anywhere.
Have you seen,
just that good.
Just out of curiosity, he would have fitted in anywhere, although obviously he would have been more successful in a different time and place. You ever seen the, is it the Slammies, I think, when he does the striptease, the Chippendale dance? And like he's basically like threatening to nude up on the stage. Meanwhile, the body's there on the side of the stage, like, you know, nodding along. Yeah, like, go on, Rick, do it for the boys.
Yeah. Oh my god.
What year is that?
I think he's 87.
He's just the whole thing, even the music. They kept the music in the Attitude Era, it would have been amazing. Right. Just the music, the tights, the custom tights. Yeah. We're just like, if you just said, oh man, you imagine if he had like Austin on his crotch like that. That would have drove Austin mental.
The real rattlesnake.
Yeah, real rattlesnake.
I think that's it. It's the attitude that, he had a down, dirty, badass street to him. And he's just, I'm guessing, just his size, a little short for the era he was in.
A little thin, too, yeah, like the thin waist.
Yeah, wasn't the typical huge guy.
The only guy ever to have an anchor tattoo on his arm and have no one talk shit about it. So is that telling you about Rick Rude?
Yeah.
That's what Austin feud with Rude and then Savage, that's what we need.
They needed a guy like that in 99, especially when I think about it. Because look at the guys that got pushed, like Billy Gunn and Davey Boy, God bless him. But, you know, these guys, they shouldn't have had a run then. But Rude... Man, that'd have been fun.
I think that's what we're gravitating towards. I mean, it seems every second one, it's like, oh, you know, you'd fit in the Attitude Era. First of all, opportunity. In the landscape, it's just...
Van Fair from Pro Wrestling Only. Just to go in the other direction, Mark Henry could have been a massive star in the 80s in promotions like Mid-South. In-ring-wise, he blows guys like JYD out of the water without being too modern stylistically.
I think the JYD comparison's a bad one. But as a heel, I could probably see a lot of value in him, to be honest.
I guess
the whole thing about how he compares well in ring wise to JYD, does he? I love Hall of Pain Mark Henry, and he had that brief run as that badass you know, monster heel. But I mean, look how much of his career it took to get there.
Yeah,
and look how so small long. And look how small that window really was where people took him. So now, granted, if you actually booked him well and protected him and had him doing that earlier, maybe he could have done that for longer. But even during his great period, let's not pretend that he was great in the ring as a wrestler.
No, I think that's one of the reasons the JYD comparison isn't good. Again, you know, not talking about JYD's ability, but just their function as wrestlers, as characters, it was completely different. So I think it's a different. Wouldn't compare those two.
Right, we have another one of the common ones here. Brian Pillman is suggested by Xavier from TPWW Forums, who says, wish Pillman could have made it through the entire Attitude Era. Tofu Chipmunk from Pro Wrestling Only says, Brian Pillman would likely have the chance to headline today that he didn't get in the early to mid-90s. Gary Thompson mentions for Brian Pillman, I truly feel he should have been a champion in 95, not because of the loose cannon persona, but before that. He was involved in so many athletic matches, carrying so many people. He was a top mid-card guy, but Flair, who I think was booking then, didn't want to push him, so he was forever on the B shows. He missed 14 straight months between pay-per-views from Spring Stampede 94 to Great American Bash 95. You could argue 95 was the start of something special for him, but that was near the end of the year. But I'm focusing on the last 2-3 years before that in WCW.
Yeah, Brian Pillman, just I mean, obviously I'm not the biggest fan of Brian Pillman on this table, but
that'd be me.
Yeah, that'd be you. But yeah, I mean, Pillman, first off, like if we went to the obvious one, which is the Attitude Era, in terms of the loose cannon gimmick, is tailor made for Brian Pillman. Okay, that was he would just been perfect at that point. Austin would obviously love to have worked with him straight away, and I just think that's the dynamic.
Just think of the freedom that you would have had during that period of time, you know?
I mean, yeah, when you look in terms of the Attitude Era, yeah, absolutely, and just like the matchups he would have had would have been great as well if it was, you know, workable Brian Pillman. In terms of any other era, you know, new generation kind of era, if we're talking about WWF, I think he would have been great. He would have fitted in well into that era.
I don't straight into the lower mid card. Yeah,
I didn't see him being much really? More than the 1-2-3 kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just
Flying Brian.
I think really he had a bit more to him than that.
Flying Brian never did anything for me. I think that, still doesn't when I'm watching back.
I do think that it's funny because Brian Pillman, I think, got the highest rated Saturday night. WCW Saturday Night record with a 4.6 against Ric Flair in 1989, I want to say, and he always kind of used that as a thing, saying, "I can do well here." You know, this is young Brian Pillman against Ric Flair, managed by a woman, and it's just an interesting thing. There was interest in Pillman in the very early 90s, and he was always a little bit ahead of the curve. Anyway, obviously, I'm a big Pillman fan, if you can't tell from the way that this is coming across, but. Obviously, I think the Pillman that means the most at the top is the guy from late 95, early 96.
Yeah.
Thrusting him into, I mean, you could have put him in a lot of different places. I mean, the territories, he could have been a red hot heel, traveling around, you know, causing up a stir, doing the one big job, and then moving on to the next territory. Yeah. He would have been great in areas like that. The problem with what Gary said there in his feedback about the last 2-3 years in WCW. He's not getting in over Hogan. you need to make the massive assumption that Hogan's not going to be there for Pillman to even have a prayer at being on top. Blondes broke up in 93, and they did barely anything with him until mid 95, and even then he was doing jobs until he joined the Horsemen. It's like he was doing nothing. Anyway, moving off the beaten track, the whole point is, would he have done better in another time and place? I would vote yes quite strongly on this one.
I think, although, you know, this whole podcast is speculative, Pillman for me is almost the ultimate what if, because there are so many variables. I mean, up until the Demo accident, I mean, would he have developed the character on his own if he was in WWE during the Attitude Era? Maybe. As you say, he was ahead of the curve.
It was already, the loose cannon was already in place, but I see your point in terms of would he have amplified it as much
it
as
really
he had
refined,
to
yeah.
because he had to rely on that.
Yeah, and if he hadn't got the injury,
would never have gone there in the first place.
Exactly. So, and then the whole thing is, where would he have gone? Yeah, okay, so he's in. But I think with Pillman, if we're saying, actually, to take out the territories, we're talking, again, if he just stayed healthy and fit around, you know, timing-wise, he was there at the right time.
Well, this is actually an interesting thing, because I read an interview with Paul Heyman once where somebody said to Heyman, don't you think that Brian Pillman was so ahead of his time? And Heyman countered and said, actually, I think Brian Pillman was absolutely perfect. He was the master of the time that he was in, because he always knew what the next move was going to be, and he was the one that took the first step on the next move. Now, of course, the contradiction to that is he never actually reaped the rewards of what he did. The smaller wrestlers getting pushed further athleticism came later on than Pillman in the early 90s. The attitude and the stuff like that. Again, he missed, you know, he was early by a couple of years in terms of like when that came along, and he could have been great and could have been a top guy, like a real difference maker. Does he get that, is another hypothetical here, but does he get to that incredible creative peak without doing the destructive things that led to his downfall anyway?
Again, a perfect summary, the whole frustration and
trying to get the big deal,
yeah, everything that goes into play, goes into the psyche to get him to that place. I don't, again, hypothetical, I guess that's not the question. The question is, if he was fully healthy, no, I think he was purposely built for the Attitude Era.
I think even if say, like, no matter what happened, no matter what he did, he always would have ended up kind of like broken down and in that state. I think even in the Attitude Era, I think even a commentator or manager or just character, Brian Pillman, in
it could have been legendary.
Would have been legendary. And as, you know, Jerry Kinglaw did a great job, you know, at that time period. But, like, yeah, Pillman, even if he was injured, he still would have been a huge star in the Attitude Era, because he was just so good.
Have any of you really heard much of his Shotgun Saturday Night commentary he did with him and Jim Ross?
Bits here and there, yeah.
Yeah, I've only heard bits.
It's funny stuff. It probably gets some ridicule in the JBL vein of maybe burying people a little too far sometimes, but I just find it hilarious.
While we're on the subject of commentators, I would be remiss to mention, not to mention, the great Jerry Lawler.
Indeed, lovely tie-in.
Shout out to Tennessee, by the way. Yeah, feeling that Corbin love.
Yeah,
but yes, Jerry Lawler would. I mean, Lawler, fantastic face heel. I love him as a baby face. Amazingly charismatic heel.
Yeah, one of my favourites of all time.
Would he have been better anywhere else at a different time? Or is being the man in
the
Memphis
king of
for 40
Memphis.
Years? Does it get better than that? I don't know.
Yeah, Lawler's an interesting one because he's just so talented. He's so unbelievably good. We were talking about his ability to feign sincerity and how real he comes across and the connection he had to the Memphis audience before we went on air. And the thing about Lawler is, I'm not sure if he ever gets the chance to be the king. Not just the king of the king character, but I mean the actual, you know, the guy who has the run of the place, pretty much, which is what Lawler had. Does he get a chance to make that connection on the same level, or is he going to be like Dusty Rhodes, who comes in and has a role underneath the top guy? The beauty of Lawler is his flexibility as a face and a heel, in the fact that he could have done absolutely anything. He could have been the challenger of the month, or he could have been the guy. It's hard to say when he could have been a top guy.
I think if he'd have come in, okay, 80s, say, he would have been positioned as a mid-card filler guy along with all the others. They accumulated through the territories, Race, Rhodes, that kind of, you know, that kind of...
That JYD spot, in essence.
Yes, but I think if it was a young Lawler as a face, I think he would have connected so much. I said the believability.
He could talk
I
so
think
good.
He would have connected and would have found himself up the card with it, and then eventually getting turned. And so I think he'd have had a run with Hogan.
I think he would have been a massive star, don't get me wrong. Lawler's the guy that's... How is he not going to be successful? He's just too damn good.
I think he does better than DiBiase.
Interesting. In terms of longevity at the top, he might be right.
The only thing against him is the character with the... I suppose you probably have to position a similar character anyway, but with the DiBiase character having the added bonus of Vince thinking it's like his...
It's him.
Yeah, that's something working in his favour, but I think as purely on the guys... I'd take Lawler.
That's actually a very good point. I kind of begrudgingly agree with that because I'm a DiBiase fan. I think in terms of that, yeah, I think Lawler would have to have the up on Ted DiBiase, just because from a character perspective, the Million Dollar Man character was great, particularly during the 80s of the, you know, the excess
and the
materialisticness and so on. But it did have a shelf life, which it obviously did, because, you know, he wasn't at the top for very long. Whilst King, as a heel, would find new ways to annoy people, and for me, like, that would be... I'm going to be biased anyway because I'm always a heel guy over everything. So for me, King's chance to be a top guy was actually when he was in the company. It was in that 93-94 period, that new generation, yeah, to be a top heel. I don't think they actually did enough.
No,
as a top heel.
To be quite honest, I think they were probably going to, with the way things were shaping up, until the sodomy charge came along. In which case, they were hands off Lawler, and he kind of lost a lot of his steam in the 5 months that he was gone, which was a shame. But again, the point that we're debating here is is really that kind of run more successful than this than what he had in Tennessee anyway. Probably not.
I think roughly he got what he got. I mean, in terms of heel, as I said, they maybe could have done a lot more with him in that 93-94 period where he could have been the top heel because he gets heat.
Oh, man.
He knows how to get heat, okay, which is what that company desperately needed at that time. In terms of babyface Lawler, I think he reached the level and was in the right place at the right time completely. I think, as you said, being the king of Memphis and so on, I think he was in the right time, right place, and I don't think he could have done any better at any other time.
But moving on to some more feedback that we got here. BBA from the UK Fan Forum. I will go with Cesaro and the WWF in around 93 to 97 for the reason that he could have been Western Europe's answer to the Bulldog in the UK. From what I've read, WWF was massive in Germany and other parts of Europe during this time, and while they capitalised on this with a ridiculous amount of house show tours, perhaps they could have done more to push a European star on the same level as Brett, just like Bulldog was with Brett in Wembley Stadium in the early 90s. For all the bad gimmicks in the company at the time, WWF was willing to book the few talents that could wrestle near the top of the card, and size wasn't too important. Besides, there was a lack of main eventers in general, and so someone who stands out like Cesaro would probably find himself near that position anyway. I'm not saying he would have got the belt, but he could have had a similar position to Bulldog in the US, headlined the European tours, done PR work with his language skills, etc., and perhaps maintained and increased mainland Europe's interest in the product as the Attitude Era came in. Also, matches against those guys mentioned, Brett, Owen, HBK, Bulldog, would be excellent.
It's actually, yeah, that's actually a very good point. I mean, obviously the negative of Cesaro is essentially the same negative as with Jack Swagger mentioned earlier.
That Vince McMahon certainly feels.
Exactly. That's actually a really good point. Like the whole counterpart, in terms of a match perspective, wrestling Brett, Bulldog, HBK, Owen Hart, all those guys. Jesus Christ, can you imagine matches? They would be absolutely fantastic. Probably what was keeping them going during those mid-90s was those foreign tours that they did quite regularly. Hence why Bret Hart was one of their top guys, because obviously when they went to Canada, he was a huge star over here in the UK as well, and also in Europe
huge
as well.
Huge in Germany.
So you know, obviously we had Bulldog as well. So yeah, Cesaro would have been just another great name to bring in the crowd.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah. It's not necessarily talking about place on the card, but in terms of value, I seem to be more valuable then.
Yeah, I see the value, absolutely. In terms of him himself, I mean, but I do think he would get a run. Thinking, you know, Owen, Bulldog, they all got runs.
Yeah.
So he'd definitely get a run. But I think, to be perfectly honest, say what you want about Vince McMahon, and most of the stuff he says is either bullshit or it's corporate speak. But I kind of agree with what you said about Cesaro. He's super talented. And I think we said it ourselves, but there is something missing. So I think it's really, in terms of body of work and value on the card, rather than a PR guy, which I know is a tough distinction, but I think he needs to go to a place where he can just work and doesn't have to worry about his face. And
you had a prediction, didn't you?
Yeah,
my
prediction is he'll be fired within the next 18 months, 2 years, go to New Japan, and he'll be generally considered the wrestler of the year, I think. He'll be the best wrestler in the world. I think
bold prediction.
If he goes, I just think you put him in Japan throughout the 90s, throughout the 2000s, where the onus is on him to work and not rah-rah. Put the shine on the right things with Sari. The guy's an amazing talent, but I absolutely understand why there's trepidation about pushing him to the top. I really do.
Yeah. I think he definitely would have been Intercontinental Champion in that time period.
What does that mean?
He definitely would have. Well, it meant a lot more back then than it does now. The lower titles mean absolutely nothing. So, like, it is a lot lower than what you could have got right now, because the titles don't mean anything. They haven't given him one in a while anyway. They've done nothing to him. The only thing that they gave him, which they deemed to have any sort of worth, was at WrestleMania when they gave him the freaking Andre the Giant trophy. And then look what they've done. They turned him heel. Turned him heel. Put him with Paul Heyman, which at the time we thought was a great idea. Turned out to be bad.
Yeah.
Very bad idea. Everything they've dealt with that guy, where it was like the dodgy music, Oksana, freaking trying to make him out as a playboy, whatever they've done with him has always been the wrong step. And the one moment where he started getting some momentum behind him, and they did the right thing at WrestleMania, and they fuck it up again. If he was in 94, I don't think they would have done that with him. Okay, he would have had a glass ceiling on him, he would have had a limit to him, but I don't think they would have made as many mistakes for Cesaro in that 94 period than they have today, and he would have got the Intercontinental title, and it would have meant a lot more.
Tigrick from the UK fan forum for another member of the roster currently. Rusev would be an incredible opponent for Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 2. With his size and athletic ability, he'd blow people's minds while the gimmick would fit right in. I'm not sure 1986 would be ready for Lana, though. They'd have to digitize her legs. Crazy Edgar from TPWW also says Rusev, but in 1981. I'm guessing he's a challenger for Backlund, he's probably thinking there. But in terms of Rusev, obviously this character, as soon as it came along, was first. The first thing everyone thought was, well, this is about 20-25 years out of date, right?
First off, anyone would have been a better choice than King Kong Bundy at WrestleMania
2. I'm not a Bundy fan.
First off. And secondly, if Rusev and Lana were in the 80s and they worked a program with Hogan, Rusev better keep an eye on Lana because Hogan will try and steal her.
Oh, here we go again. The Hulk Hogan.
He's a scheming, lying little shit who steals people's wives. And especially with those legs, he'll definitely get some Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Do you think Rusev translates well that period of time? Because the formula was bigger challenger for Hogan was the rule of the day. Rusev is probably smaller than Hogan.
Yeah, height-wise, he wouldn't.
And he doesn't have the intangibles of a Savage or a Piper necessarily to carry the fact that he's a smaller guy.
We've got to look at the gimmick. I think that's probably the primary thing.
Yeah, that's probably why.
So instead of inserting him in there, you need to be inserting him in with the other foreign gimmicks of, you know, Nikolai Volkov and Iron Sheik, and saying, is he a better option than them? So I think I'll probably in that foreign, not necessarily Russian, but just that foreign competitor, I think him and Lana would have had more steam to them than Nikolai Volkov.
That's saying nothing.
I think he's a talented guy. I think he could, but I think it's unfair he hasn't hit his peak yet. So I think maybe we look back at Rusev in maybe 3 or 4 years' time and say would he been capitalised upon better? I think the trouble with the gimmick in general, going back throughout time, it was more relevant during the Cold War. Absolutely. It's a one-trick pony gimmick. So, and I don't see how he is any different to anybody else in that respect.
Yeah, the challenger of the month kind of thing. Yeah.
Is he? What level can he get to? See if he gets Cena at WrestleMania. Might answer a few more questions. Can he hang? How does he look in the position?
And how does he survive coming out of the big match once it's time for him to start repaying some jobs?
That's the thing, you know, when the whole gimmick is you don't lose when you lose, and you rebound.
Glass Smash from the UK fan forum. Although he couldn't wrestle, but sometimes I wonder what WWE could have done with a character like Nails during the Attitude Era. He was only around for a few months in 92 while the company was family friendly. I just think they could have come up with some really crazy shit for his character and really pushed the envelope as far as they could.
So you're saying there's something in the gimmick they could have done better at a different time, but I don't think that relates to the actual guy in the orange jumpsuit at all.
No.
Yeah, that's my feeling.
I see your point there. I don't know if it would have really been... Because the thing is, what they probably would have done with Nails was something as shocking as what they did in 92 when he beat the fuck out of the Boss Man in what looked like very violent fashion at the time. Yeah. That was the shock value of at the time. So if they're going to do something based on shock value in 98... maybe he would have pulled a fucking knife on somebody or something like that, or he would have, you know...
Rape.
Yeah, it was something completely deplorable for shock value, but does he really have much more longevity? I'm going to say no on this one.
In terms of the actual guy behind Nails, no. Not
Kevin
anywhere.
Wackles.
Yeah, not anywhere. Not even in life. Right. In terms of would that have worked in the Attitude Era...
I get the point that it's a character you can do something edgy with, given the nature of it being a convict.
Yeah.
So I can see that, but the guy itself, I think, you know, let's put the jumpsuit on someone else.
Yeah. Nightro from Wrestling Forum. Deuce and Domino in the 80s and 90s. Great tag team that was talented in the ring, had a good look, cool entrance, cool theme, and cool finisher. Problem was, they were just stuck in the wrong era with their gimmick. Had they been around in the 80s and 90s when WWF was very gimmick heavy and when reruns of Happy Days were still showing, they would have had a lot more success and would have lasted longer too. Also, the competition was much better in the company in those days compared to 2006, where their only competition was London Kendrick. I have to object to them being labelled as a great tag team here off the top.
Nah, yeah, not a great tag team. But the only way I could see them being of any use is if they were kind of like the, I don't know, the bump bodies of Honky Tonk.
Oh yeah,
like he was in like the, you know,
his
God,
lackeys.
Yeah, he said lackeys. Oh, God, I really would be against having Honky Tonk have a stable. But like, if Honky Tonk was going to have a stable, they would be the guys you'd put in it with Jimmy Hart as well. And so like, if he's going to be Intercontinental Champion right for a long time, they would be the two guys that he keeps putting in front of his challengers to try and beat
Deuce
him before he ends up taking him. You know, the guys in his corner.
Don't know that Deuce and Domino get more over because the Fonz is on Happy Days during the time. To be
if
quite honest,
Fonz as a manager.
Perhaps.
I'm more interested to know how he remembered Dushan Domino.
What, in general?
Yeah. Where'd he plug that one from?
I have no idea.
Cool.
When I sent the feedback out, I said, who's the one instance that immediately comes to mind, and for some reason this fella just thought Deuce and Domino.
It wasn't written by Deuce and or Domino. Yeah.
Crimson from TPWW says Tito Santana and Rick Martel now would be awesome. They would have had more success now than they did then. See, this is one of those things where we kind of off air talked about how we don't really think anybody would be more successful now because they're such a terrible job making stars. I like both these guys. I'm a big fan of the model even though it's a shitty cheesy gimmick, but model's great.
Yeah,
Martel as a worker in the AWA was fantastic. Santana was a fantastic babyface. At the same token, I don't really see them. I see Tito Santana in the Kofi Kingston role, unfortunately.
They'd be a tag team wearing masks, coming out of a midget who pretends to be a bull. That's what they'd be doing.
In terms of the style that they wrestled, the whole point of Strikeforce, that high flying, fast paced style, I think they've already got that in the Usos.
How about individually speaking?
Martel. I thought he could have had a great one as Intercontinental Champion.
Yeah,
I really do at that time period. I thought like Martel with the pink, the trunks, the sweater vest tied around his neck, the tennis racket. Brilliant.
Is a quick one. Do you prefer model Rick Martel, or do you prefer the period where the Strikeforce had broken up and he wasn't the model yet, but he's in the blue and he's got the poofy hair?
Pre-model.
He's got very Rick Rude-esque perm.
No, Rick Rude could only wish to have a perm like this. This is the full Charlie's Angels, absolute bouffon, where the hair enters first and then 5 minutes later Rick Martel walks out, absolute bouffon. I thought you meant more like just even a bit further than that, when he started having like the ponytail. He was a model, but he hadn't got like the short hair yet. He had the ponytail and he looked even douchier.
Berserker's Beard from the Wrestling Forum says Raven. He came at the right time, but he's in the wrong place. Put him in the WWF instead of WCW in 97 and 98. He was designed for the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty simple and pretty strong answer.
Yeah,
when we were talking earlier about that, well, you guys thought that there was definitely room for them to find people in 98. I think,
Raven fits in very well.
Raven 98. Yeah. Raven 98 against Austin.
Yeah, there you go.
I think everything we've said about why the Attitude Era probably gets picked on so much, Raven's arguably more set for it than Pillman, I think.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, you seem far more convinced on that than I thought you would be.
No, early Raven, before he became a fat mess.
Before he's wearing a skirt.
We're not talking TNA Raven, we're talking about WCW. Because I like his running WCW Raven.
It was fine, but I think he was so different when he first came. So much depth to the character and his words. He would have been cash money.
Cash money. Yeah, I think we're all going to agree on this one. Raven should have been higher than he was. The great Falconetti from F4W, which actually, these words could be Carl's. Randy Orton and his chin locks would have been perfect for the 1920s.
Are you sure that's just not Carl?
It might be Carl, for all I know. We got one more here that got multiple nominations. Mike Awesome. Whitey Ford from TPWW. Mike Awesome 10 years earlier. A guy that had the size and look that Vince likes, plus the agility that wasn't seen then. Funk Doc from Pro Wrestling Only also said Mike Awesome was always a guy who felt like he should have been more than he was. What with his physical gifts? Maybe if he stays away from garbage wrestling, he becomes a poor man's Don Leo Jonathan. Who knows? I don't know, Mike, we're going to have very polarising opinions.
Yeah.
We've talked about Awesome before in terms of our disagreements on me and Kieran not particularly seeing all that much in Awesome, and you, on the other hand. The thing with Awesome for me, and I don't want to speak for you too, Kieran, is that the reason people think he's good is because he got that preferential booking in ECW where Heyman had him throwing guys who are 5'9" through tables. And granted, he could do a great dive and a great splash, and his matches with Tanaka are fantastically brutal. But when you take away the guys who are willing to take that kind of punishment, and you put him in a normal setting, I don't know where Mike Awesome's appeal comes.
Yeah, from a match basis, he was definitely around at the right time, because he did rely a lot on the hardcore style of powerbombing people through tables and so on, and they certainly wouldn't have been doing spots like that in the 80s, and they wouldn't have been doing spots like that in the early 90s. In terms of just his general size, which is obviously going to be a main issue, no, he wouldn't have fit in the 80s.
He had the hairstyle.
Again, and I mentioned this before, would probably be in a new generation. I think just that time period where the guys were starting to become a little bit smaller. So the fact that he wasn't particularly tall, he was only like 6'3", wasn't he?
6'3", 6'4".
Yeah. It wouldn't have been so glaringly obvious that he's not the tallest guy in the world. You know, when he's getting in the ring with Bret Hart and Owen Hart and 123 Kid and British Bulldog and so on and so forth. So maybe that time period, if he was able to sort out his wrestling style and able to work a match without a chair or a table, that probably would have been his best chance.
As our grandmother used to say, wish in one hand, shit in the other, and see which gets filled up first. God bless us all. Mike Awesome for me is like the ultimate ECW product. I don't think he's been spectacular anywhere else without the gimmicks, and he's got the worst facials, those big eyes puffing those cheeks out.
Yeah.
Not for me, Mike. Not so awesome in my mind.
Yeah, it's going to be hard pressed to defend Awesome this time. I mean, as you said, yeah, he was definitely an ECW product. So I think he was in the right place at the right time there.
I don't know what made me think of this, but how I think I was just thinking about the Hispanic stars.
Yeah.
About Conan, if he'd WWE probably maybe mid-90s through Attitude Era.
I think so. See,
or maybe even later than that.
Because Conan's the shit. Conan's a very, to me, a good comparison with Conan is JYD, in the sense of a guy who's not really up to much in the ring, but has got charisma in spades, and he got over fantastically well in the late 90s as part of the Wolfpack. He's like the babyface who actually seemed like he was cool. I don't know where he places, but I've always thought that he could have done more.
Do you think he's not a good enough worker, so the Eddie period?
It's tough
because it's a different charisma.
Yeah, it is. But the whole thing of like how good you are in the ring, I always wonder how important that is, because maybe it's more important now because the vast majority of the fans are people who look for that kind of a thing.
Mm.
I mean, and the proliferation of wrestling is so much now that you need to be better to stand out, or weaknesses have become more glaringly obvious when you're not as good. Man, I don't know where he fits.
Right,
maybe because we were talking about, you know, Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio before and the failures of Sin Cara and Del Rio. The two problems with Sin Cara and Del Rio is that they had no charisma, whilst Conan, at least to some extent, did. So maybe Conan in the modern era, or at least in the last 6 years, probably would have done a lot better.
That's the point, but can he go to the level to actually get it for the modern?
Probably in the similar vein to when they were talking about Cesaro in 95 and being that guy to boost the foreign market. He's probably that guy. If they go, we need a new Mexican star, this guy's really charismatic, gets the crowd riled up. Not the best work in the world, but he still gets the crowd riled up. He might be a good key point in terms of their foreign market.
The stuff with LAX.
I was just going to mention too.
Yeah, exactly. Which is very modern. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you've got, I suppose you say 2006. You say, but if you've got LAX instead of Los Barriquas,
yeah.
I don't know. Any era, I think they'd been
real.
That would have been.
I was thinking the whole time Conan babyface when you were talking about this, but Conan heel as that guy who knows how to get real heat. And that, I mean, he was awesome in LAX. He was the star of the team.
Yeah.
But that'd be how you get him over with the Mexican audience.
Yeah.
WWF landscape anyway. Be a heel and then obviously turn.
But did they go... Okay, just to counter that though, would they ever go that hard with something like that? Look at the thing they did with Swagger and Colter, just to mention Swagger again, where they did the whole thing where he's anti-Mexican, but they didn't have the balls to say that.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they started to go in that direction, without them even saying anything controversial, they did that fucking bullshit video. Remember that thing with, like, where Swagger... Oh, this is Jake Hagar, and I'm Wayne Kieran, and we're really characters who are trying to, you know, stir your emotions up with this, you know, this story we're trying to tell. You know, they're afraid of real heat, and that's the thing that Conan was great at as a heel for me. Yeah. And that's where his strength would be in the WWE.
I think as that three man group, I think that's actually a good contender, but that could work somewhere else.
So moving along to some other guys who were in the wrong time and place, Bill Thompson from Pro Wrestling Only, Steve Corino would be regarded as one of the best performers of all time had he been around in the 80s.
No, he wouldn't.
Disagree?
I'm not. I don't want to sound like I'm burying Corino, because I do like a lot of the things he does. I do think he's quite overrated.
That line there, one of the best performers of all time, I never got into Corino as a worker the way that I did as a promo. There might be something more. I would wish that I had more there from Bill to kind of elaborate on why he felt that would be the case.
There's a window for me with Corino.
He could be a very good territorial wrestler.
Oh,
getting heat in Memphis and stuff like that.
But. Absolutely. And I think he just nailed it there. I think with Corino, we're talking a very specific time period. And for me, it's going to be around about that 2000 period. Not Fat Corino. Or not like, you know, brunette Carino. It's that kind of time where he faced Dusty Rhodes and he had the blonde hair and the cowboy boots. That particular time period where
that guy
at that time when I was when I saw those ECW tapes from 2000, I was like, oh, okay. And I go, this is a better evolution than him being the manager of Rhino. And I go, this is actually pretty good. He's got some heat for this. And then like that heat transferred into, you know, a babyface pop. I think he hit the nail on the head there. I think the absolute best place for him, rather than ECW, would have been in the territories, traveling around, being the jackass.
Think about how competitive the environment was in the 80s. It's Carino. Yeah. It's the best of Carino that we ever saw up to that level.
He's good, don't get me wrong, but I just, again, nothing that sets him out. In that fiercely competitive era, he would have been a fine mid-card deal, I think, but...
Okay. Cheap Shot from Pro Wrestling, and he says, Umaga would have been so great in 80s WWF. Quite interested to see what people think about this one, because there's a lot of guys like Umaga around that period of time.
Yeah, that's the thing, because this is just weird. Even though the gimmicks are nowhere similar whatsoever at all, the first thing I thought about was Earthquake. I'm just thinking, in that 91, I know it's weird, but Umaga would have been a better choice athletically than someone like Earthquake.
However,
someone who could really work, because he wasn't the greatest worker in the world, but he was good.
He was good.
You know, he. I think in that time period, particularly in 1990, where they're looking for new bad guys to face Hogan or Warrior.
Question is, and this is always the thing we're talking about, time and place, guys who are in the wrong time and place. Does Umaga have a discernibly more high profile or better career in the 80s, or does he have pretty much the exact same role that he had anyway?
Yeah, I just keep thinking of Haku. I'm not sure really stands out.
Yeah, me either.
I think he's better than Haku. I think he's better than a lot of. He's a lot better than a lot of the Samoan personas at that time. Yes, he would have been one of a large range of big guys that are out there. As I said, I already mentioned that, you know, like the Earthquake, and you said like the Haku and Samoans, and also to the extent, you know, people like Big John Studd and Andre and so on. All these big guys that they used. But I think what he did have over a lot of those guys, with the exception of Bam Bam Bigelow in the 80s, was that he could move.
Just thinking about it, I can imagine him in that maybe 92 to 94 period.
The throwing shit at the wall period.
I can see him... Yeah, I can see him getting a decent push there. I'm not sure, again, longevity, and would he actually stick? I'm not sure. And
talking about a bit of being replacements of other people, he would have been a lot better option than Papa Shango.
Yeah, that was one of the worst angles in the history of the company, so you're going to get no argument out of me there.
So that could have been actually good.
Yeah.
Actually, that could have been pretty decent.
Take on the Warrior in 92 instead of Papa Shango. That's not a bad place for him, actually, because they need... That's the time where there isn't a guy like him around, and they could have pushed him as a bit more of a fierce...
Put him in the ring with Savage. Savage would have got him over.
Yeah, and it's early enough in that transitional period as well where I think he fits in there as well. It's kind of that fluffy, but he can still be...
Slightly serious and intimidating,
good one there. Pantsless Yoda from F4W. Sheamus could have been huge in the 80s or early 90s. He's at least as good or better than Sting as a worker, and crowds were more accepting of cartoonish looking baby faces back then.
I think Sheamus is one of the most underrated workers in WWE at the moment.
Yeah,
but he's no Sting. Don't start me on Sting. No way. The master of the no-sell.
I'm gonna turn this around right back to the foreign thing that we were going on about. My big issue with Sheamus being in any other scenario than what he is in right now, he's Irish, okay? That's going to be the big thing. So straight away, he's going to be heel, okay? Because it's just what they did. It's just what they did back in like the 80s or early 90s. Anyone who was not American was a heel. So Davey Boy was the one exception, I'm guessing. And like Sheamus. But if Sheamus is at the same time as Davey Boy Smith, Davey Boy's going to be more popular. But it's, I don't know, because he's just Irish, I think they would have had him as a heel persona for the majority of time he was around. And I don't know, I just have this dread of feeling like if he ever did turn babyface, it would be because he'd be Americanized. You know, he would have started going, oh, I quite like the Rougeos, but actually genuine. You know, where he just goes like, oh, I'm an all-American boy now. You know, he's waving the flag. I'm a proper American citizen now. Ah, screw the Irishness and stuff. That's the only way I could see it. Because something like that where Sheamus is promoted these days, Irish. That's his whole thing. Okay?
I just don't think they would have done it the same way.
Yeah, but Vince thinks he's Irish, doesn't he? With Kennedy McMahon. Come on. He would have... Nah. I don't know, Sheamus, probably Yeah, maybe that early 90s period I could see with the for the European thing. What was said before about Cesaro, I'd probably agree with that, but more so for Sheamus. He's not Conor McGregor, though.
Yeah. He's not Conor McGregor in terms... It's again, though, it's kind of a difficult thing to say, because the one thing... Sheamus, to me, when they tried to run with him as a top guy recently, didn't connect anyway. And there is something missing there for me in terms of that over-the-top charisma that really hooks you and makes you really want to root for him. I do think he's actually a good worker. Very good worker.
He's definitely a good worker. I'm going to spitball here. I'll probably counteract everything I've just said. What about babyface Sheamus? I know. What about babyface Sheamus in NWA in the 80s, that same time period as Magnum TA? As being a counterpoint to Magnum TA. So let's just say Magnum TA, he's had that horrible accident, he's out, looking for someone different.
They bring in the Irishman.
Bring in the Irishman, Sheamus. Big guy, kicks ass, has the bro kick, could easily take on the Four Horsemen by himself.
Yeah, I can see him as a very good counterpoint to Flair. I see him in a very similar position to every other babyface that unfortunately was in that position, like Windham, like Luger, like Sting, who they put Ronnie Garvin, there were plenty of them. They had the run with Flair, and no matter how hot they got, Dusty wasn't going to book anybody above him, so down you go. You get cycled in and out. We have a couple more to get to here. Dude Live from F4W, CM Punk. Your favourite wrestler, Kieran, would have been spectacular.
Punk.
I know. Would have been spectacular in 96-98 ECW. Perfect gimmick for the time and place, and built-in feuds with virtually the entire roster, I'm guessing because they're all drug addicts. But there you go. So CM Punk and ECW.
We kind of did it when he first came along.
That ECW?
With Raven anyways.
Oh, that thing. Yeah. In ROH.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have been the top guy in the company, but what does that prove? ECW, come on, he'd been so far ahead of everyone else.
Yeah. In terms of a promo guy, there are very few people on his league, especially after Raven leaves.
Well, who else was in ECW in that time period?
Shane Douglas, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, Taz, Bigelow, Candido, Lance Storm.
Heel or face.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
So,
okay.
I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, okay.
Like, Dreamer, Sandman.
It would have been fantastic. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it would have been fantastic, but it's like you're taking Cristiano Ronaldo and putting him in the Telford United lineup and saying, will he score goals in the conference? Of course he will, son.
Ryan Strikes Back from F4W. Not that long ago, I was thinking about guys who are secondary characters who would probably do really well in WWE today, and I don't just mean Perfect or Piper getting a run with the title. I mean Val Venus. Val could wrestle, he was decent on the mic, but in the late 90s and early 2000s, he had a porn gimmick, and there was just so much talent to compete with that he didn't stand out at all. Today, I think he'd easily be an upper-card guy, maybe a main eventer. Not as the long-haired porn star, but as Sean Morley or something along those lines.
Yeah, so obviously with the PG era right now, he certainly wouldn't be doing the Val Venus gimmick. But then, when looking at that, the only thing that, with any remoteness, the only thing that was interesting about Sean was the Val Venus gimmick.
So as soon as
you take that Val Venus gimmick away from him, got nothing.
And to be quite honest, if I think that once you've got outside the first year of what you could do with that character, I don't really think that there's much. There was somebody in the feedback that mentioned his short-lived push against Mankind in 99. Again, the dearth of guys that were getting pushed, nothing against Val Venus personally, but I just, main event guy, Val Venus. Now again, if you strip away that outlandish character, what is he?
Yeah. I mean, like we said,
I don't see great promo skills. I don't see the ability to get heat and connect through what he does in the ring.
Nah, solid. I mean, yeah, decent look, solid size, solid promo. But again, he's just kind of he would have been a journeyman without the gimmick. To be honest, I don't think where would he have landed? To say Venus in a different period, I think like similar for a few guys, it's asking for them to show something that they didn't show previously.
Yeah.
The gimmick made him, you know.
So. Yeah, I think that you're saying that teleport him in today, where I guess the point would be that there is so little personality on TV anyway. That's where he'll stand out a little bit. I think it's kind of an indictment on this as a suggestion personally.
I don't even think that's true though. Personal, I mean,
oh, you got Bray and Ambrose and guys like that, but everyone's reading from a script, so yeah, maybe they could do something with him from that regard. I don't know.
Maybe, but I just think. Is he better than Sheamus? No.
No.
I just don't think he's particularly fantastic. He might have got a push. He might have developed a character that did get him, he did connect with and got over with. But again, that's to create something that he didn't show from the Val Venus or the Sean Morley personas.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Loki from the UK fan forum for the final one we're going to read tonight. When a question like this comes up, I always think, imagine what a Vader or a Bam Bam Bigelow would do in today's WWE. They'd be huge, monstrous stars, surely world champion material. This is the second nomination for Vader.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Bam Bam more than Vader on this one. Again, I do like both of them. As I said before, Vader, I did pick him as my best big man, but just in terms of modern today, I will just call out the whole he's a big fat piece of shit. Okay.
Oh, Vader. Yeah.
They're just not. Yeah. So I don't necessarily see it with Vader. With Bam Bam, I think there's probably a little bit more flexibility. I think he's got probably more a more modern look to him than Vader has. If we're going to go literally with the Vader gimmick and the Bam Bam gimmick, I think Bam Bam's got a more modern gimmick than him. And a little bit more about him as well, wrestling wise. I think a little bit more. A little bit more kind of flexible in terms of the athleticism, I guess.
The ability to sell. But we had this discussion before on the Best Big Man Show, if I'm not mistaken, Kieran, where you were talking about how the problem with Bam Bam as a vote for Best Big Man or the role of a great big man is that in many ways he never really came off like a big man.
Yeah, contentious point. I'd argue. I think I said the same thing about Taker. So I had you call Taker a big man in the last 5 years when he's gone 50-50 with Shawn and stuff. Bam Bam. Not over Vader, I wouldn't say. I mean, probably personality, yeah, but then you wouldn't have booked Vader to come out and do 20-minute promos.
Maybe they would.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't do that. As a protected guy, I think value to the company, definitely Vader, I think.
Yeah, I go Vader every day of the week over Bam Bam. I see your point in the sense, perhaps, of like... But then again, it's almost kind of earmarking it for failure, saying, well, he's a guy that can bump and sell for everybody else and do what Bigelow ended up doing anyway, because what Bam Bam Bigelow ended up doing was being supplemental to everybody else. Yeah. And that's where the big vote against Bigelow goes. Bigelow's best opportunity and window to be a megastar was probably late 80s when he had that run where, you know, he was the last guy on the babyface team at Survivor Series 87 and stuff like that. He had a lot of momentum behind him and he was treated like a big deal. I don't know if today, again, as a babyface, I don't really see it with him as a top guy in this era. As a heel, if I'm taking Vader or Bigelow as the top heel, give me Vader. Absolutely give me Vader. As a top guy, give me Vader.
Yeah, I mean, it's swings and roundabouts with these two because they are just like so similar anyway. I'm not saying like I'd completely dump on Vader. It's just like, and when you look at like what they actually did achieve, if you look at the stats and you went, okay, which one of these are you going to take, knowing what they could potentially do, yeah, you'd take Vader because Vader had a much more lengthy career. But in terms of just looking at him as a potential, like you're taking him from the very beginning and you're just thinking like, right, if this guy's booked right, in this era, which is going to be a small miracle in itself, which one will benefit most? Who will succeed the most? I'm not saying Vader won't succeed. I'm saying he will. I'm just saying, but with the whole mask thing on as well.
Is that a bad thing?
I know it's not. No, it's not a bad thing. I'm just kind of counteracting. Like he's got the mask thing on, which is fine. But I guess it's going to go just down to the look. I guess, I don't know. There's something like, when I imagine it in my head, I see Vader coming down to the ring today to face Dean Ambrose, right, on Raw, or Bam Bam. Bam Bam's more of a fit for me. He just looks like he would fit in with this product more.
Okay.
That might not necessarily be the greatest compliment in the world because the product sucks. but then Bam Bam would be the best thing on it. But it was same as Vader. It's apple and oranges.
If
I couldn't get Bam Bam, I would certainly jump at the chance to get Vader. But if I had a two and said, look, you have to pick one, gun to the head, I'd say I'd probably trust Vader more, but I'd be more keen on trying with Bam Bam.
Okay.
Yeah, I've said time again that the whoever runners Vader's champ and watching it on WCW Worldwide here in England
early
90s. What year?
93,
there you go. That's how Lesnar should be booked now, but when you don't have a guy on TV, you can't.
No, that is a bit of a flaw.
So if you could take that and book that now, fuck yeah.
Yeah,
Vader was... Cena Chase, great. It'd be great heel for Cena Chase.
Oh, yeah, Vader is the heel champion with that fear that he instilled in everybody.
Yeah.
And then Cena having to go up against this guy. That would be a... It may actually get a little bit of sympathy on Cena if he took if he took such a beating from Vader that he did against Lesnar.
Took a power bomb. pulled the mats away, power bombed them.
Let's not talk about your wet dreams here, because I know that's something that you probably would love to see personally.
Well, I'm going to, just before we move on and end this, I'm going to throw a couple more names out to you, right? Now, these names actually were very popular in their time periods. Okay, so I'm not saying like these people I think could do better outside of their respective time period, but I just wanted to see what your thoughts would be as to their chances somewhere else.
Okay,
I'm thinking
enough.
Specifically in the 80s, okay? My two names are DDP and Goldberg.
I think if you book Goldberg the same way, because the thing is, to me, Goldberg is the Ultimate Warrior in many ways of the 90s. He's the guy who, I mean, completely different in terms of the presentation and look, obviously, but in terms of the guy who is the archetype for the era that's going to get over to that crowd, because he's the perfect demolition device for that period of time. He's very much the Ultimate Warrior. So
is he a better option than the Ultimate Warrior, though?
I think they're exactly the same in many ways.
I'd probably put more stock in Bill.
I probably would.
I think Goldberg, given that push, gets over in any company, anywhere,
anytime. He had
anytime.
Such physical charisma.
Yeah, that's it. It's not all on the booking. He has incredible charisma.
Yeah.
He's super explosive. He's believable. I'd love to see a fight with him and CM Punk in UFC, for instance. Make it happen, Dana White. And
just to see what happens.
Yeah, just to see what happens. Why not?
Yeah,
I think
from just Lillian's point, I think he is a better option than Ultimate Warrior, just for the fact that he would have been something different, because whilst yes, their bookings were very similar and the general attitude to how they were perceived was very similar, the gimmicks were completely different. And I think when he had Ultimate Warrior, where even though he had tassels, he had makeup on, it was very similar to Hogan in terms of the cartoonishness.
That's what I mean, the archetype of the era.
Whilst Goldberg just being like the complete opposite to Hogan would have made him stand out a whole lot more than Ultimate Warrior did with Hogan.
Would he have been a heel in the 80s?
Maybe that might have been the Bam Bam scenario. Maybe he might have started as a heel, but then just because he's so fucking awesome, he just ends up babyface.
I think I'd probably agree with that.
Yeah, that's a pretty tough one. As for DDP, I think DDP's perfect time and place, to be perfectly honest.
DDP of 98-99.
Yeah,
he's really good.
Don't get me wrong, I'm a huge Page fan. I don't know if he has the same success anywhere else, because so much of his success was based on circumstance of who he knew, what he knew, the area of the time that he was able to get in. I don't see where else he fits in and does as well.
Early
anywhere
90s?
Else.
Or the new generation time? They're looking for new guys? Whether it was babyface or heel? Would he be a good heel foil for Bret Hart in 94?
I see him on the same level as Razor if he comes in at the same time with the same kind of exposure at that point. Yay! If he could go at the time, I see him at a similar level to Razor.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know about that. That's tough.
Because the reason why I said he's got Goldberg, as I said, because the obvious thing of like even with the same booking or not or whatever, like would Goldberg still have been hugely over in another era? Which you guys answered.
This is the thing though, just to count my own point. Would they, during the era where physiques were completely ridiculous, have gone with Goldberg? Because the thing is, Warrior's physique, it was fucking ridiculous during this period of time. Goldberg's was obviously, he was fucking jacked, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't to that completely freakish, obscene proportions that Warrior got.
It wasn't, no.
So does he get the chance that Warrior gets?
But then again,
then?
He had something different to Ultimate Warrior and Hogan, where these guys just looked like they were gym rats. Okay, so these gym rats that are doing this fake sport. Whilst Goldberg, because of what his shape was and because his background, is more legit.
But
if you go
that,
into that athleticism where he said, like, this guy was in football, and this guy's badass. Okay, they probably would have used that a lot, maybe to introduce him and say, he was in the NFL. You know, it's like, they probably would have used that and said, look, that's why he's built the way he is. He's not like a gym rat. He's built to tackle, like, take people down, kick the shit out of them, you know, the immovable object or something like that. You know, I don't know, maybe they might have gone with that kind of thing, because he wasn't a small guy.
No, but I just don't know if real translates then at the same time. Because look what did work. The completely unreal, the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
But it's a good point, the comparison about the bodies, but he is still massive.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong.
He's still a big guy.
And more than, it's the explosiveness and the way he moves. He moves dangerous. He moves like he could fuck you up. So, Yeah, I think it's a good point. The more relevant point is, would that persona, even the push, would it have been a babyface character, or would it have been a heel persona?
Yeah. And in terms of like with the DDP, it's the same thing, because like again, like in terms of height wise, DDP wasn't a short person either.
No.
DDP was pretty tall, and someone who was as tall as him, and he did weigh quite a bit as well. He wasn't a fat guy or anything like that, but you know, he was a big guy. He was actually a pretty big guy.
Never had a great body.
Yeah, I didn't have a great body, no, but more probably down to age than anything else. But like, he didn't have a great body, but he was a pretty big chap, and he was able to do quite a lot of, for his size, quite athletic moves. You don't really think about it at the time. When you think about him, you just think, well, you know, he wasn't really that athletic. He goes, no, he was actually, because he was actually deceptively pretty big in ways. Okay, he wasn't like muscle bound or anything, but he was pretty tall, and he was a heavyweight, you know. But it was just like, That's what I'm getting to, like in terms of like the 80s, where like or the early 90s, there's something a little bit more about him, because he isn't a small guy. He isn't like a Shawn Michaels height or anything like that, or British Bulldog who was short. It does a little bit more to him. He would have stood over them a little bit more. He would have had a bit more kind of height to him, and so he would have looked a lot more imposing.
Where's the physique? God damn it! That's what it means.
Yeah.
But charisma though, so the charisma go a long way. Jake did find
exactly. Maybe that's where they would have inserted him in a not to copy him, but even though he did in himself, probably do the Jake the Snake role, whether or it was as a heel or babyface.
Just to go back, put him in the Razor spot in many ways.
Yeah,
because Razor, I always saw as a guy that was very much in the Jake position, just with the IC belt.
Yeah, and that wasn't necessarily a bad position, because you know, and we've argued this at times. There's been, you know, whether Jake was at certain times maybe a number two guy after Hogan. You know, at different points, whether it was maybe Savage at some point or Ultimate Warrior,
yeah, but
you know,
three or four.
But yeah, he was somewhere up there, and the same with Razor, where Razor, you know, whilst he never won the world title, was Intercontinental for a long period of time, on and off, and he was like another just below the main guy, just below Brett. So maybe that would have been DDP's spot, which wasn't okay. It's less than what he eventually did get, because he was a 2-time or 3-time world champion. But yeah, it was at that time period, it wouldn't have been a bad spot to be in.
Wouldn't have been a bad spot, but again, time and place better. I don't think it is, to be quite honest.
Probably
like
not,
I said, no. I don't see that window of being that high up any other time. We have stretched the gamut on feedback in terms of time. If we didn't get it to yours this time, I would like to apologise. However, you do have a perfect chance to talk to us next week. scgradio@hotmail.com. We're doing the Christmas show next week, so drop us a line. Any kind of pertinent topics, any questions, anything you want, just throw it on over and we'll discuss it over a beer. For G. John Chase,
I got nothing.
For Kieran O'Rourke,
me either.
I'm Liam O'Rourke, and I've got nothing either, so we are out of here. Thank you very much for listening.